Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, and welcome to Drinking Well, a podcast by Berry Brothers and Rudd, with me, Barbara Drew. Today, I'm sitting down with Chris Pollington, Italian wine expert and one of our senior account managers. We'll be discussing Super Tuscan wines, their evolution, and what's next for this Italian wine region. Chris, welcome.
Thanks, Bob.
Now, you have been on the podcast before, but I believe it was in slightly different circumstances. Is that right?
It was. It was during lockdown, so I was recording from my back bedroom in 2021.
Many years ago now. But here we are in person in number 3 St. James's Street in our Bourne room, actually, named after our founder, the Widow Bourne, our smallest dining room. Really beautiful place to be recording, and delighted that you could join us today. Now, Chris, you have been at Berry Brothers and Rudd for a few years now.
Yeah.
And you are a passionate and incredibly knowledgeable expert on Italian wines. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about how your career has developed and why Italy is your chosen wine country?
I've always found the wines of Italy fascinating. From the time when I started learning about wine when I was at catering college in the mid-80s, all the way through, and then when I joined the wine trade in the early 90s, it was an area which continued to fascinate me. It's something that I wanted to spend some time learning about, going and visiting the vineyards. I did marry an Italian as well, so there was a little bit...
Always helps.
A bit of an extra interest there. Italian food and Italian wine, I think, are amazing and go beautifully together, obviously.
And do you have a favourite region in Italy? One of the things that particularly strikes me about Italy is it's almost a series of separate countries. The wine regions are so distinct. Do any of them jump out at you?
Indeed. Tuscany was definitely my first love. It was the first area that I fell in love with. Since then, I've moved on through Piedmont, which I'm very fond of now. And I find the wines of Campania really, really fascinating as well. It's one of the best value areas for Italy and as yet pretty unexplored by the fine wine drinkers of the world.
Indeed, yes. Can be quite tricky to track down some of those bottles here, but beautiful reds and whites from around Naples.
Exactly, up in the mountains.
Lovely. Today, our focus is very much on Tuscany and specifically on Super Tuscans. Now, these are wines that have fascinated me for many years as well. And we'll look at how they've evolved and kind of where they're heading in the future. So to kick things off, can you give us your best definition of what on earth a Super Tuscan wine is, Chris? Okay.
Well, it probably all started in 1968 with the launch of the first commercial vintage of Sassicaia, which was a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc from the coastal region of Bulgari in Tuscany, not an area famous for its wine production. This was then joined by Tignanello from the Chianti Classico region in 1971. And then various others joined them. And really, the press were looking for a name to group together these wines, which fell outside the wine laws at that time for the region, and to give a catch-all name to them, which is where they came up with the term Super Tuscan.
And why were producers making wine outside the wine laws of the region? I mean, Italy, like France, like many European countries, had lots and rigorous laws around what you can grow and how you can make wine. So yeah. Why would you throw all of that out the window?
At that time, there wasn't a huge amount of quality wine made in Italy. And a lot of people believed that it wasn't possible to make quality wines from indigenous Italian grape varieties. That wasn't true, as we now know. But at that time, a lot of people were looking for the wines of France, which were at a higher quality level before then. They were looking to make wines of that style, so they started using French grape varieties, which weren't permitted by the local laws at that time.
So they started with French grape varieties, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, Merlot. But it's very much evolved from there. Is that right? So a lot of Super Tuscans today are now made with Sangiovese.
Indeed, indeed. So 100% Sangiovese Super Tuscans really started in the late 70s and the beginning of the 1980s with things like Flacinello and Ceparello. And to be fair, though, Tignanello itself is largely Sangiovese then and still is now. It's still 80% Sangiovese mixed with Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc. They hadn't abandoned the idea of making quality wine from Sangiovese.
When I look at Super Tuscans or host events around Super Tuscans, it strikes me that there are really two main groupings, two main areas where these wines come from. So we have those that come from the hills, really from the Chianti and the Chianti Classico region. And many of those do use Sangiovese today. And then we have those from the coastal region of Bulgari, which you mentioned right at the start in 1968, is where we had our first Super Tuscan. And they tend to be slightly different stylistically. They've often got, well, they have to have those French varieties in them as well. Do you have a preference for the hillside Super Tuscans, the coastal ones? Would you separate them out differently?
Not necessarily. I think, as to be said, there are a lot of hills in Bulgari as well, and probably the best wines come from the hills as well as some of the areas of the plain. But the Bulgari DOC itself is actually fairly broad. You can make wines including Sangiovese, Syrah, Merlot, the Cabernets, all sorts of different grape varieties, and there's an awful lot of experimenting going on in Bulgari with those varieties, some of them including some Sangiovese in the blend, though probably the most famous ones, Sassicaia, Ornellaia, are mostly Cabernet Sauvignon, and indeed Oran Gratamacco, which we're very fond of here.
We had this revolution in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and some of that was improving the quality of vineyard material as well, improving the work in the winery. Bring us up to date. What is the state of Super Tuscans today? I mean, IGT, Toscana, a lot of them are labelled under this. It almost doesn't matter if you're in the rules or outside the rules today.
No, the laws have become much more relaxed. So there are a lot of wines made within the DOC and the DOCG laws, which include some Cabernet Sauvignon with the Sangiovese, include some Merlot, and even include some Syrah. But the big famous names that started off in the 60s, 70s and 80s, Ornellaia, Sassicaia, Flacinello, Ceparello, they're still there and they're still made as IGT, even though many of them could now be within the laws.
And do you think that's because they've built their brands sufficiently and they think that actually it's more important to say I'm Flacinello rather than I'm from this local area?
Yeah, and also a lot of those producers also make wines within the DOC and DOCG laws. So they make their own Chianti Classico as well. So they differentiate their Super Tuscan from that on the grounds that it's a different style to the Chianti Classico, that it's not essentially things like Flacinello and Ceparello aren't Chianti Classico, even though they could be labelled as them, because stylistically they're different. They are much more international full-bodied wines, if you like, in the Super Tuscan style. Quite often, for example, the Fontodi who make Flacinello, they make Chianti Classico Reserva called Vigna del Sorbo, and quite a lot of my clients would buy both. And indeed, Tignanello now still has the Super Tuscan Tignanello, but there is also a Chianti Classico Reserva called Tignanello from the same vineyard.
Wow, incredibly confusing.
Indeed.
Do you have a favourite Super Tuscan wine that you turn to time and again?
I've got a soft spot for a couple of them, probably. Yeah. Tignanello was a wine that I was very fond of as a young man in my 20s. I remember going from my first job in the wine trade down in the West Country and taking a bottle of 85 Tignanello with me, which I'd lashed out £10 or £15 on it. It would now be about 500 if you could find it. So that's still one of my favourites. But also Sassicaia is still a fantastic wine. It remains very pure to its roots. It's still the same blend that it's always been. Cabernet Sauvignon and Cabernet Franc, no Merlot. Not a blockbuster wine, very much an elegant wine in the style of the Bordeaux left bank first growths.
That's an interesting analogy because these wines are often compared with the Bordeaux class growths. And in fact, they're often a good entry into Italian wines for those who aren't so familiar. Actually, the Super Tuscans, they're made with grapes, sometimes from Bordeaux. They're made often in a similar style with lots of ripe fruit character, lots of new French oak. And there is that real similarity between them.
Indeed, yeah.
Do you think that that's sort of a helpful comparison, both for customers and for producers? Or actually, do you think that we should be seeing them through a more Italian lens?
No, I think that's a very useful role for Super Tuscans to introduce people who know and love Bordeaux and maybe the other great Cabernet Sauvignon wines of the world into the world of Italian wine. Because even though they're similar to Bordeaux, there is definitely, if you like, an Italian accent to the Super Tuscans, to things like Sesico and Ornellaia. They have perhaps a higher level of acidity and freshness than you might expect to find from Bordeaux, for example.
If the role of Super Tuscans when they were invented was almost to improve the quality of Tuscan wine because what was being produced simply wasn't good enough and the regulations didn't allow producers to reach their full potential, it seems as though that's been achieved now. So why do we still have Super Tuscans?
Well, I think they've carved themselves out a niche. They have created something that didn't exist before and people love them. They now complement the range of Tuscan wines instead of replacing it, which I think is what they originally were intending to do.
I mean, are you saying if you're a producer now in Chianti or on the coast that it would be difficult to build your reputation, to build your brand without having a Super Tuscan in your lineup?
Most major producers in Tuscany have a Super Tuscan now. Not all of them, but the vast majority of them. But also the producers of Super Tuscans, those who started with Super Tuscans, now have a range of wines as well. So there's usually something a little bit cheaper and more accessible as well as the headline wine.
So it's almost like every producer has got a little bit of the traditional and then a little bit more of the modern side by side. Something for everyone in one portfolio.
Exactly. Most producers will try and build a portfolio where there's a little bit of something for everyone. There's a more everyday wine alongside the wine for special occasions.
This is a very interesting comparison with Bordeaux, for example. Your Bordeaux producers will make their Grand Vin and they'll have a second wine and a third wine, perhaps.
Yeah.
But there's always the family resemblance, as it were. The winemaking is never that different. And yet
exactly.
In Tuscany, there is quite a big difference. You've got perhaps different grape varieties and really different techniques being used for each wine.
Yeah, absolutely. There is so much flexibility now, which is probably thanks to the Super Tuscan movement. There is a huge amount of flexibility within the law and within the ranges themselves and the way that the winemakers think.
Fantastic for customers, giving them a huge amount of choice, but also a little baffling, perhaps.
People are always telling me that Italian wine is baffling. For me, that's part of the attraction. The
exactly.
fact that it's endlessly fascinating and complicated and complex in a good way.
Part of its charm. You could spend your life focused on nothing but Tuscan wine and you still wouldn't quite have
got to the bottom. No, you could never get to the entire bottom of it. No.
Are you noticing other Italian wine regions taking the lead from Tuscany, seeing what's happened there and saying, this is a brilliant idea, let's make super Campagna wines or whatever it might be?
There is a bit of that throughout Italy, but nowhere has embraced it quite as much as Tuscany. There was certainly a movement in Piedmont to start doing that in the 80s and 90s. That's probably waned a bit over the years and people have concentrated more on making Barolo and Barbaresco. There's less of a move to make super Piedmontese wines than there used to be. And various other regions are similar. Most are concentrating on their traditional styles of wine and wines which have become more famous over the last 30, 40 years.
And what do you think this has done to the reputation of Sangiovese? Sangiovese is widely planted in Tuscany and originally it wasn't even permitted in wines on its own. It had to be blended in Chianti with other grape varieties. Now it's made into some beautiful examples, but do you think it's still a second-class grape in Tuscany or has it fought back?
Not at all. I think it's held in high esteem by most producers, both those who make wines from Sangiovese and even those who don't. Certainly the role of Super Tuscans has been to raise the quality of Sangiovese across the board and it's also raised the profile of the grape variety, I would say.
Now, you have brought a very exciting example of a super Tuscan for us to taste this afternoon. So thank you very much for that. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the bottle that you brought and indeed why you've chosen this of all of the super Tuscans at your disposal?
Indeed, partly because I don't think people would know it very well, and partly because I think it's very good quality for the money. It's the 2019 Poggio Valente from Fattoria Le Pupille in Scanzano, so on the coast, but further south than Bolgheri. It's 100% Sangiovese, aged in French oak, but quite large French oak, 50% new, 500, 600 litre barrels. It's very much of the style of a super Tuscan, but 100% Sangiovese, and also from an area which isn't terribly well known.
So Bolgheri is, would you say, the heartland of super Tuscan production today?
Absolutely, on the grounds that that's where it started, yes. with Sassicaro in 1968, but also Chianti Classico, there are a lot of super Tuscans, and also in Montalcino and Montepulciano as well, there are a lot of super Tuscans produced.
Bolgheri, kind of warm gravel soils amongst other things, mm-hmm. coastal, and so Scanzano just to the south.
Indeed.
Just to the south of that, perhaps getting some of the reflected glory of Bolgheri. Are we seeing more interest in Scanzano as a region?
Yeah, it's always been a region producing good quality Sangiovese-based wines. Morolino di Scanzano and Morolino di Scanzano Reserva are famous names from southern Tuscany. I remember buying a magnum of Fattoria Le Pupille's Morolino di Scanzano Reserva 1990, back in the early 90s, and drinking it about 10 years later, and it was fantastic. So I've long been a fan of Fattoria Le Pupille's wines.
Fantastic. Let's open it up and have a taste then. Beautiful. So this winery has an impressive pedigree, is that right?
Indeed it does. They've been making wines for around 45, 50 years, something like that. The first vintage of the Morolino Reserva was 1978, and I think they started making their Cabernet-based Super Tuscan, Saffredi, in the 1980s. And it was actually the consultant for Saffredi was originally Giacomo Takis, who was the original consultant at both Sassicaia and for Tignanello as well, as he worked for the Antonori family.
Strong expertise coming through there. This is absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Really vibrant red fruit, but also a lovely floral character on the nose here as well. Really gorgeous.
Yeah, I love the red fruit, the Sangiovese, that red cherry fruit style to it.
Absolutely.
Really nicely lifted. Previous vintages of this would have been heavier on the oak. They've reined in the oak, which is happening pretty much across the range with super Tuscans. Sassicaia now uses a lot less new oak than it used to. It's now only about 50% new oak in its production, I think.
Still arguably modern in style, but perhaps similar to what we're seeing in Piedmont, in that the spectrum producers are not going quite so extreme at either end. They're just reining it in a little bit more subtlety.
Exactly. I think probably across the wine world, there's less new oak being used.
Really lovely. I mean, what strikes me here is this is noticeably an Italian wine. There's a sort of a characteristic to the fruit. There's a slightly floral character, almost like a sour fruit, red cranberry note to it, ever so slightly herbal, beautiful mouth-watering acidity as well. Yeah, there's a real vibrancy there and kind of a purity and a precision to the fruit.
There's lovely fruit, clearly. There's lovely depth to the fruit, lots of ripeness. But there's still that gorgeous acidity cutting it, making you know it's an Italian wine. And it's a wine to go with food.
Yes, although, I mean, having said that, for me, the tannins are beautifully ripe here. Really well integrated. Again, times past, if you opened up a bottle of Tuscan wine from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and the tannins would be extremely noticeable, and yet here, really nicely rounded, really well integrated into the wine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's been made in a style where you can drink it straight away, but it will also age. It will age for 20 years easily, I would say, this one.
If you can, tell us how this differs to their Morolino.
Their standard Morolino will be a bit more structured. There's probably slightly more lushness to this. It sees more French oak, whereas the Morolino will be more traditionally aged using Zambotte as well as a bit of oak. But it won't be as flashy, if you like. It won't be as rich, full-bodied. It will take a little bit more time to come round. And perhaps age slightly longer, or certainly a similar amount of time, but age in a slightly different way. And the Sangiovese and the traditional Morellino Reserva will become a bit more leathery and tertiary, whereas this one will pretty much stay with that gorgeous white cherry fruit all the way through its aging process.
So really very much a matter of taste and up to the drinkers to decide what they prefer, whether they want that slightly fruitier style, slightly lusher style.
But of course the drinker can have both.
That's true. That's very true. There is space in most cellars for both. Exactly. If not, maybe you need to do a little bit of cellar management. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on how useful you think the term Super Tuscan is today. Given this variety of styles, do people still respond to it? Do they still understand what is meant by a Super Tuscan? Is it a term we should be using in the future, or should we throw it out and start with something else?
I think people like it. I'm not sure the producers like it very much because it doesn't really mean anything. And there are so many different styles of wine made underneath that catch-all umbrella. But I think the consumer quite likes the idea of those Tuscan wines, which are, if you like, slightly more modern, slightly more user-friendly, slightly more towards the French and international styles of wines that they're used to. So I think there's probably still a role for the phrase. Depends who you talk to about whether they'll like it or not.
I mean, is there an argument that most Tuscan producers should be trying to make wines which are user-friendly and a little bit more fruit-driven and a bit more modern anyway?
Absolutely. I think there's still space for the traditional styles of wines which are quite rich and tannic and will take a long time to come round and then ultimately come into their own when they have that tertiary characteristic of undergrowth and leather and all sorts of other yummy tobacco flavours that you can get from the very best of traditional style aged Sangiovese.
And given the ubiquity of this term, the fact that so many people still use the term Super Tuscan, do you think that that means that we shouldn't be relying on the classic DOC and DOCG names? Do customers know what Morellino di Scanzano is? Should we just go by brand name and producer instead?
Probably not many people outside of Tuscany know much about Morellino di Scanzano, I'll be honest. But yeah, I think there's a role for the DOC and the DOCG wines as well. I generally tell my customers not to worry too much about wine lore because there's such a mixed bag with Tuscany, and DOCG is not necessarily a guarantee of quality. After all, anything with Chianti on the label is DOCG these days. But equally, IGTs can be at the very, very top of their game, like this wine here.
In terms of pricing, tell me a little bit about that. I mean, the Super Tuscan, some of them can fetch prices as high as the Bordeaux First Growth. Do you think that that represents their quality? Do you think that there should be a different way of looking at them in terms of pricing?
There is a wide range of prices. It tends to be only the very, very top, most famous, the scarcest wines, which have the very, very high price tags. There's a lot of Super Tuscans which aren't that expensive. You can be picking up wines quite easily for 30, 40, 50 pounds a bottle, but equally there are wines which run into the hundreds of pounds if you want the very best, the very rarest.
And in terms of adding these to your cellar, how would you persuade someone who is a traditional Bordeaux lover that these wines deserve a place in their cellar as well?
The best way is to get them to try them, really. Come in for a taste when we have the opportunity. Come to one of our wine schools or our tours of Italy, for example, or one of our lunches and dinners to try the wines alongside some of the wines that they know better.
One of the things that strikes me whenever I look at this part of the world is the relatively short space of time in which this evolution has happened. If we look at the top producers in Bordeaux, they were classified in 1855. Most of them have retained that classification. And yet here we're talking about 50 years. These wineries have gone from established wineries, but making these wines that nobody had heard of, to making absolute icons. To me, that suggests that if you find the right producer who is innovating today, that actually even in 10 years' time, you know, you will be following and buying from an icon.
Absolutely. I mean, it is incredible how quick this has happened. The range and depth, which is why I think it probably has a great future, because it is ever evolving. There was some experimentation with the Syrah grape variety, which you don't see quite as much in Tuscany anymore, because obviously Italy as well as France has got much warmer. There's perhaps a bit of a question mark over whether Merlot has a huge future in Tuscany as well, because it's got so warm. But I think there probably is a great future for Sangiovese, for Cabernet Sauvignon, and increasingly for Cabernet Franc now as things get warmer.
Tell me more about Cabernet Franc. It's a grape I'm particularly fond of. We're seeing it doing wonderful things in the Loire at the moment. What styles of wine does it make in Tuscany, and where can we find it?
Great vision by the founder of Sassicaia, Mario Incisa della Rocchetta, to actually put Cabernet Franc in his blend originally when he started making wines there in the 1940s, because it wasn't a terribly fashionable grape variety. I suspect he got it just because it was one of the Bordeaux grapes and he thought he probably should put it in alongside his Cabernet Sauvignon. But as things have got warmer, it really has come into its own. Piero Antonori at the Guardo Tasso estate makes a 100% Cabernet Franc wine called Matarocchio, which I think is incredible. It's one of the world's great Cabernet Franc wines. And we're seeing increased amounts of Cabernet Franc in most of the Cabernet-based Super Tuscans. I think Ornellaia are now using more Cabernet Franc alongside their Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon and Petit Verdot in their blend.
And is that to help keep alcohol levels in check? The back label of our Poggio Valente, and it says 15% on it. Are alcohol levels increasing? Is Cabernet Franc a way of managing that?
It does help, certainly, but also the characteristics of Cabernet Franc, I think, work better with a warmer climate. I think we all remember the Cabernet Francs from the Loires that were made in the 70s and 80s, which were...
Well, some of us do. Bit. Myself, perhaps, not so much.
Okay. Ow. Yeah, so the characteristics of Cabernet Franc really come into their own, I think, in a warmer climate with some delicious raspberry fruit and less of the capsicum flavours,
yeah,
which were prevalent in the grape variety when it was a little bit cooler.
With the idea that there's still a huge amount of innovation going on in this area, which estates have you got your eye on at the moment?
Many and plenty. I would say the Tenuta San Guido, the people who make Sassicaia are still making great wines across the range, including their Guido Alberto and Le Defise. Ornellaia is in an interesting place because Axel Hines, who's been making the wines there for a couple of decades, has moved on to Bordeaux. So there's a new regime in charge there. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at Ornellaia. I think Fattoria Le Pupille in the south, in Morolino and Scanzano, are making some very interesting wines. And indeed, the Antonoris keep on making some amazing wines, both in Bolgheri, the Guardo Tasso estate, and in Chianti Classico itself with the Tignanello estate and their various other estates.
And any of those favourites that you're squirreling away in your cellar?
There are one or two Super Tuscans in my wine fridge and in my cellar. I think it's a very interesting region. I still have a very great fondness for Tignanello, but wines like this Poggio Valente, I think, are fantastic as well and clearly have a great future.
Absolutely. The ones which are perhaps not yet quite so widely known, get in there before everyone hears about them.
Before they become too famous, exactly.
Any special Tuscan wines in your cellar which you're particularly looking forward to opening up in the future, or any vintages that we should be looking out for, any back vintages we should be stocking up on?
Absolutely. I've got some 2010 Tignanello, which I'm very much looking forward to having at some stage. I suspect it will be the same sort of quality as the 85. And there are some great vintages which we're waiting to come into full maturity. 2010 and 2016, just to name a couple, are fantastic. And then the 2019s are looking wonderful, as we can see here with this.
Indeed.
2019s across the range, I think, will be amazing.
Certainly on the basis of what's in the glass here, there's a perfect balance of ripeness, freshness, and real skill here in the winemaking as well. I will certainly be adding a couple of cases of this to my cellar. Thank you for bringing along such a beautiful, beautiful wine and for sharing so much of your knowledge on Tuscany. I'm off to book myself a flight there.
Thanks, Melva.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Drinking Well, a podcast by Berry Brothers and Rudd. If you'd like to browse the producers mentioned in today's podcast, visit bbr.com/podcast. Or if you're interested in starting your own fine wine collection with Berry Brothers and Rudd, all the information you need can be found on bbr.com/collecting. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you again for listening. I'm off to track down some 2010 Tignanello. Cheers!